Desai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Dear listeners, greetings and loving Sai Rams to all of you from Prashanti Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai, and a warm welcome to all of you for today's Thursday live hosting and broadcasting from the studios of Radio Sai. This is the segment Morning Glory. To begin with, dear listeners, as always, let us all collectively offer our most humble, prayerful, grateful pranams at the lotus feet of the voice and the listener of Radio Sai Global Harmony, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Today is 3rd of August 2017 and the time right now in our studio is 9:40 a.m. Indian Standard Time. And the weather here at the ashram is very pleasant. A mixture of cloud and sun in the skies and a cool breeze. It's very nice morning here at the ashram. Well, just a couple of minutes ago, the bhajan session concluded in Sai Granth Hall after the Mangalarti. I'm sure most of you would have listened to the bhajan sessions which came to you live from our website radiosai.org, and right now many devotees have lined up in Sai Granth Hall to offer their pranams at Mahasamadhi. So once again, dear listeners, a warm welcome to all of you for today's Thursday live. And today, as always, I've got an episode from our radio series, Trust with Divinity. In fact, the interview that I'll be playing today is part two of a conversation with a Sai devotee couple. In fact, part one of this conversation was played last week. But before we get into the conversation, I would like to share with you two new Radio Sai initiatives which were started last month. The first one is Karaoke Bhajans Tracks. Well, most of you must be aware of this awesome Radio Sai initiative. It's Karaoke Tracks for Sai Bhajans. Every month, 9 karaoke tracks will be released from our website radiosai.org. And last month, the first set of 9 bhajans were released, and this month, the second set of 9 bhajans will be released. So, dear listeners, karaoke tracks are instrumental tracks of Sai bhajans, and you can play this track and sing on it. The karaoke tracks are without vocals, so you can sing on this instrumental track and have a nice bhajan experience. The second nice Radio Sai initiative which I am going to tell you is a new video series called Golden History. Dear listeners, most of you will be aware that many dramas have been enacted in Swami's Divine Presence by Swami's students and Swami's devotees. And Swami has keenly involved himself during these drama presentations. In fact, for many of the student dramas, Swami himself has written the dialogues for the script. He has edited the dialogues. He has selected the actors. He has suggested the costumes, composed music, wrote the lyrics, and he even sat through multiple practice sessions also for many of student dramas. And finally, these dramas were offered back to him. So in this Golden History series, video series, we will be taking snippets from these dramas which were enacted in Swami's Divine Presence, and we'll upload it on our website radiosai.org every Monday. Well, these video clips has lessons of life for all to learn, and each video clip will be one standalone complete clip with a message for all to learn. So right now, already 2 episodes have been uploaded, and coming Monday will be the 3rd episode. So please don't miss it. In fact, you can catch them from our website radiosai.org, or you can go through Radio Sai's YouTube channel and watch it at your leisure. Okay, right. All right. Let's come to the segment Tryst with Divinity. So as I said, today's conversation is second part of the conversation. The first part of the conversation was played last Thursday. And today's conversation is with Mr. and Mrs. Padmanabhan from US. Mrs. Lakshmi Padmanabhan and Mr. Paddy Padmanabhan. Mrs. Lakshmi Padmanabhan is an ardent devotee of Bhagwan and has been living in US since 1980. She has over 20 years of business leadership and executive experience in the areas of accounting and financial management. Her husband, Mr. Paddy Padmanabhan, has been living in US since 1976. Professionally, Mr. Paddy Padmanabhan has over 35 years of executive management, strategic consultant and postgraduate teaching experience. Currently, Mr. Padmanabhan is President and CEO of MyScript, a world leader in handwriting recognition and digital ink technology. Well, more important is, this couple is very active in Satisai organization in US. So let's listen to the second part of this conversation. In conversation with them is Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi. And first part of this conversation was played last week. If you have missed listening to first part of conversation, you can download it from our website, radiosai.org. So the second part of conversation is for about 40 minutes. And after 40 minutes, I'll be back again. And I'll play a few bhajans requested by few listeners. So stay tuned. I'll be back after 40 minutes. Meanwhile, listen to this conversation with Mrs. Lakshmi Padmanabhan and Mr. Paddy Padmanabhan. And in conversation with them is Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi.
And you worked in a very sensitive line of work, area of defense, contracting. It's huge, billions of dollars involved. And in the accounting section, how did the three P's play out in your work daily routine?
It's actually a very interesting question because you wonder, you know, you have to follow the rules. But at the core of it, sometimes a lot of the work you do, you wonder, is it really the right thing to do? And I've questioned myself a lot of times thinking, you know, defense in terms of entering into warfare and, you know, all these kind of violent things. But then I go back and when you analyze it, you look at it more in terms of defense as in preserving the lives and preserving the country, as opposed to more warfare in terms of, you know, non-violence just for no reason. So when you look at it in the right context, that made me feel a lot better, you know, in terms of the kind of work I was doing. And in terms of accounting, or you were asking me in terms of the three P's.
Yes.
When I did my work, I was extremely confident that I was not going to stray away from anything that was not in the rule books. It does not matter. If somebody wanted me to do it, I was not willing to do it. And so I was known as somebody who's not going to budge from what is right. And that was dharmic. And that was very important to me. And that's something that Swami's lesson taught me very early on in my career. Mm-hmm. And I followed that always.
And did it have an impact on your promotions, on your bonuses?
No, not necessarily. As I said, you know, I had, after that one incident, I didn't feel that it was going to affect me. If it was not immediate, I knew that Swami had a path, that it would take me in the right direction. And whether it was immediate or not was not the criteria. Mm-hmm. The criteria was to do the right thing and be confident that you did the right thing. As long as that was done, I felt I would get the result when it was due to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not have any issues in terms of having to face a situation where I had to compromise what is right.
That's nice to hear. Now, Brother Paddy, you worked with the who's who of the financial industry, Ernst & Young, the university in Indiana, as well as PricewaterhouseCoopers, and now you are heading your own company, MyScript. It is obviously very competitive and involves big monies, and you're advising on strategy, and we have seen that every move has an impact on the price, stock market prices, and the benefit to the shareholder. Was it easy? How practical is it to follow the three P's in the position that you were in, where you had to always work in favor of the bottom line and for the benefit of your shareholders, and yet follow dharma?
Actually, some of the trauma I've experienced in the very area that you're talking about, I actually shared that with the students when they had it was a conference on ethics that they had here some time back.
Yeah, yes.
You go through a lot of those things, especially the ones that, you know, are in the gray area, right?
Right.
See, at the end of the day, it's black or white.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you have to do what is right. And you do not worry about the outcome of it. And
but where do you get the courage? Because people sometimes may not want to hear that.
Yeah, but see, this is where I think, you know, you get matured when you listen to Swami and you have this inner urge in you to just follow his path. You don't worry about what the outcome is going to be, right? See, earlier on in my life,
yeah,
if I go back, yes, I had compromised. I made a life living in the gray area because that's where I got the best results. And I was working for myself, and I wanted to see results. But once I got clarity around this through those powerful interactions with Swami, it's right or wrong. There's nothing in the middle.
And
you have to adhere to right. And if you have faith, and if you're working for the larger good, you will take those risks. You don't worry about, am I going to lose my job?
Yeah.
Or is there anything going to happen to me? You just put faith in Swami and say, here, this is how I see it right, and this is the way I'm going to do it. And I can tell you that probably some of the discussions, it's hard to be more specific because it involved organizations and decisions, especially when I was in the mergers and acquisition consulting. There were a lot of things that you had circumstances where you needed to compromise. But if you don't and you stand up to it and you go on, I never lost clients. I never lost my job. There were a lot of people who were angry at the time I took the positions, but it came around over a period of time. So to me, I think there is no gray area. It's either right or wrong, and you stick to the right. What you believe is right, and just go out and do what is right.
Now, you're seeing this, as you mentioned yourself, as an outcome of a lot of spiritual maturation.
Right.
But if you had to advise a young person who's entering the financial world and is interested in Swami, for that person also, for example, your son Rohit, he's following your footsteps, he's a young person, has studied economics. Any young professional in this world of finance, which is so competitive, and you know, one move on the stock market can make billions or millions of dollars, make or break many fortunes, well, how would you advise them? What would be your advice? Because sometimes people want to be accepted, to find their groove, to get the traction in a good high-profile company such as the ones that you have worked for, to build a nice resume and then move on. So if they start taking a stand and being so decisive, as you're suggesting, when it comes to black and white, will it not impact their career or profession adversely?
See, 20 years ago you asked me this question, I would have said, yeah, that could impact the career. But having confronted it and just not compromising, I can tell you it did not impact my career at all. As a matter of fact, in the last 10 years, the progress I have made in my career, if you consider, being where you are as progress, I've done better in the last 10 years after I got clarity around this. And if it's not right, there is no compromise.
That is it.
And this, in our firm today, we follow that policy. And there are training programs that we have created internally where You have to work as a team. You have to be very ethical in what you do. And we have certain code of conduct that we have laid out. And it's a question of educating and getting the people to go, right? If you look at short-term profits and improper ways of doing business and you look at the results that those businesses realize, it's not positive. You might have a temporary spike, but it's not sustainable, right? And there are numerous examples to show that if you don't follow the right path, you are not going to survive long term. And that itself is a great example, right? So to your question, today, if you go into the MBA programs and others, there is a huge discussion going on around the ethics of doing business, and it has become part of the curriculum, right? And so people are learning, and I think there is improvement, and there is always progress being made, right?
It's a great development that is already part of the public discourse in the U.S. and people are considering it. And, of course, it was always an integral part of the MBA program in the Satya Sai University because Swami was always ahead of times. He is the greatest educational reformist of our times. If you're in a situation where you have a vision and a mission for your company, as you say, based on ethics, and then you have partners or members on the team who are not fully into it, and then what would be the right thing to do? To let go of them or to get a buy-in so that they buy into your ethical vision? What is easier?
I think it's really spending time, right, and working with them. If the person is receptive and you got to find the motives of why they are doing it. If it's purely a self-centered motive and they are not willing to compromise and that's the way they want to go, sometimes it's good to part company. But if the confusion they have is because they don't have clear vision or thoughts on it, I think then it becomes important to sit down and talk to them to get them to see the other side, right? And so the position I always take is if there is a difference of opinion, I would sit down with the person and have a very detailed conversation and work with them. And over a period of time, they transform and come your way. Sometimes, on a few occasions, I've had people who are very stubborn and very arrogant, and we just let them go and do the things that they feel is right, right? But personally, when it comes to ethics, my view of the world is I don't compromise.
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel very strongly that if I don't compromise and I do what is right, I'm going to have full support and Swami will take care of the outcome. And I don't worry about the outcome at that point.
When you say support, who supports Swami's or your peers?
The whole system, mm-hmm. You get the support. In the beginning, people may be offended, but I think once you start clarifying and once you start explaining your position, you can rally people around it. It hasn't deterred me from making compromises. The outcome doesn't deter me from making compromises. So based on what the outcome is, the outcome does not make me compromise. For example, if I took a hard position today on what is right, and that is not what the broader group wants, I'm not going to compromise on it. Because I'm afraid I might lose my job.
But you can say that because you're the CEO now.
Well, as a CEO, there is even more pressure, right? Because first of all, you make the decision. So there is a moral and ethical obligation for you to steer the firm in the right way. And there are people from the outside who are watching you and they are commenting on you, right? And this is where I think you cling on to your spiritual beliefs. And the person that I cling on to in tough moments is Swami. He's the one you talk to.
And do your business partners and your peers ever ask you what is the source of your moral strength?
Everybody knows that I'm a devotee of Swami. I have a picture of Swami in my office. And when I am on video conference calls, Swami's picture is visible to the whole world. I talk to them about Swami. I tell them about Puttaparthi and my involvement with Swami and what I have learned. A lot of people who are associated with me professionally know about Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. They may not have come here, but they are aware that I'm involved in that.
Mm-hmm. That's so refreshing to know. Lakshmi, what are your thoughts about advising young people?
No, I think your question is very important in that we all go through it in life where we want to do the right thing, but we are put in circumstances where we may feel like, are we compromising something? And if we didn't do it, then we also worry about the repercussions it may have in terms of losing a job, or, you know, if I didn't do it, what effect will it have on my family? See, those are the times now with experience, all I can say is you put your complete faith and you surrender. It's not an easy thing, but when you surrender to Swami, and if you have done something and you face a setback, we need to have immense faith that there is, you know, no compromise to that situation and you will come out of it. And it is not easy to do that, but as I said, it only comes with certain setbacks and failures maybe, but that is all Swami's teachings for us, you know, and it doesn't always. So we all go through that trauma, and I can tell you for myself that it has not been easy. And I gave you that example because I was extremely frustrated and there were certain things that were bothering me and I went back, but Swami brought me back. So I always think about Swami saying, you know, it's like a monkey mind jumping. You have to ask him for help to bring him back to that situation, you know, where you are making the right, right choice.
Ask Swami for help. Good advice.
Put it, yeah, that's all it is. And the second thing that one of his dreams he told me is about self-confidence. And he said, you know, he talked to me about teaching the children the difference between self-confidence and ego, you know. And self-confidence playing a very important role in terms of doing the right thing. So that's different from an egotistical statement saying, you know, I'm the best. But when you do it with the faith that you are surrendering the right thing to Swami, and saying, Swami, I'm doing my very best and I leave that outcome to you. That is self-confidence, you know. And that confidence, if you have and say that I have given my utmost, I feel like your rewards will come. It may not be immediate, but I have faced it and I have gotten it. So that is what I wanted to share when you had asked him.
Now, Paddy, after Swami told you that, you know, to ease your sense of guilt about not having time to seva, he said to start with family and go to community. I understand you did venture into a lot of Sai activities and you have participated actively despite holding such important and high-profile positions. You've been very active in the Sai organization.
See, it's like you don't look at it, you look at action. See, what Swami said was, always do good work, good actions, and do the very best you can. So I don't look at it like this is a Sai. Going to work and ensuring that the firm is in the right position in the market to be successful so people derive benefits from it, that is happiness being created with the employees and their families. This is also Swami's work, right? It is as important work as I would do in the center. Right, so really at this point, after that encounter where he talked about work as worship, I don't separate my professional work with personal work. To me, everything is work, and every time I'm involved in anything, I want to do my very best.
I appreciate that deeply, but I believe you have brought in your innovation and your know-how into the learning of SSE also with the Satisai education, which is the Sunday school that the Sai organization runs. Would you care to share some highlights of that?
See, that teaching has always been a passion for me, right? And
that's at university level, very important courses.
Yeah, and always, I think education has been a very passion. I was very passionate about that. So I've always been involved in the education activities, may not be directly as a education coordinator, mm-hmm. but I've been an SSE teacher. I've got trained on all the group level educations in the SSE programs, etc. Right, but the group that I really like to focus and work with is Group 4, because that is where they have got all these skills they have learned, and now they're going to practice in the world, and there is a lot of confusion, right? So I take a lot of time with the kids who are in that age group, getting ready to graduate from high school, going to college.
Yeah.
I love being with those kids, and I love spending a lot of time with them. Well, this is something that I do, both of us do it with our children, is we don't want our kids to look at us as parents who are saying what is right and what is wrong. I think they need to be our friends and share everything so we can guide them the right way. So that is something that I use with those kids. I would just sit down with them and talk about everything. Everything that a parent may find it difficult to talk with their kids sometimes, and the kids don't express it to their parents, right?
So open, clear
it's
communication.
It's really open communication. Even in the group four classes, I do that. I don't shy away, because I think the whole idea is they all have all these things, what Swami said, and they can answer all the questions you ask them.
They're all theoretical knowledge.
Yeah, but it's not one way they put it into practice.
And as Swami told you, the different levels of knowledge.
Yeah, it's not one they put into practice. So when they go to college, they're going to be in a totally different environment where they need to self-manage themselves. There's going to be a lot of temptations. How do you cope with that? How do you deal with that, right? So I've got my group four kids who would talk about their boyfriends or girlfriends. It's okay, let them talk, because it's a very normal thing and there are ways to deal with it and work with it, right? Mm-hmm. So that open communication is something that I work with. And I work with not only just our center, but group four kids across. Quite a few of them I talk to them and work with.
And there's such a critical...
That is the most critical pace.
And I sometimes feel that as a PSY organization, we invest so much love and time and effort in taking them to that level. And once they go to college, we tend to lose them till for at least a good 10 years till they experience life the way they want to, and then they decide to settle down, and then they become parents and they want their child to come back to Balvikas. So in the process, about 10 to 12 years are lost. And after investing 9 years... for every guru, so much of, because teaching SSC is not like teaching any subject in a school. You invest so much of love and emotion into the process.
Right. See, I think the key is following what Swami told us, it's not part-time. Yeah. It has to be fully integrated in every action of your life. Right? And to understand that, you got to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And then you do a self-assessment, introspection of yourself, and start to clean yourself out, right? And if you take that and go to the children and in the group four and tell them, look, start asking why. Why do I need this? Why do I have to do this? Is it right? Is it wrong? Ask a lot of questions and try to find the answers yourself. So in a way, you are trying to get them to be more discriminatory in what they do and start asking the right questions, right? And it's okay to make mistakes. But the important thing is after you make a mistake, you understand what mistake you made and make sure it never happens again, right? And then you, as your senses improve, you ask the right questions and you avoid making those mistakes, right? And always, when in doubt, do what is right. And don't worry about the outcome, right? It's easy to say, but I think spending a lot of time with the kids and talking about it, I think opens their eyes, right? And to me, group four is really the place that time when the kids are in group four is the hardest time to practice a lot of Swami's values. And if they learn to do it, then those kids will turn out to be gems in the world.
Now, Paddy and Lakshmi, you speak of such staunch faith in Swami with a great deal of confidence, but all of it stems to a large extent from your physical darshan of Swami, your connection with Him, and you were blessed with interviews and personal interactions. Today, the scene has changed completely after Mahasamadhi. For some people, this is an era of great confusion. What does it mean to you?
It is a situation where I felt that we came back to Puttaparthi to get our batteries recharged. Okay.
I don't think that scenario has changed so much for me personally, because we were used to not seeing Swami in a physical form day to day. We lived so far away from India. We came here once a year and we saw Swami, and not every time is he physically interacting with you every single time. We did have that blessing and grace. But what I would like to say is, as long as you are in Swami's fold and you are a firm believer and you have faith, it is not necessary for you to have had the physical interaction. And on that note of faith, I want to say something about what happened to me post-samadhi. It was our daughter Priya's wedding was just 2 weeks away. And my mother, who's almost 80 years old, was on my side of the car. And I was driving to get some of the errands done. It's exactly 2 weeks before the wedding. And I got into a situation where I was going to have to make a left turn, and the signal had actually turned red for the opposite side. And here was my mind blank because I was thinking of so many things. My focus was on the light over there, and it had already turned red, so automatically it would be green for me. But I did not realize there was like a 3 second delay.
Yeah.
And I had just inched forward. But there was a person who was speeding. He was at 55 miles and he clearly ran the red light. He ran the red light and he went so fast that he hit my car's front. And had I moved just even an inch further up, I don't think I would have been living today talking to you. The entire car was completely smashed up. All the airbags had inflated. And my mother was on my right side, and she's a very petite, frail woman. And her airbag, it was a total 1 second, everything had changed. And this gentleman who hit my car went through and tumbled 3 times over and had fallen down, you know. And I thought he might
have lost. His car had tumbled
down. And he had also, he was inside, and I thought he must have lost his life, because that's how impactful that was, because he was driving at tremendous speed. And here were two things that I realized at that point. I came back literally with nothing. I had just bare concussion on my leg, small, little bruises on my shins between my knee and my ankle. And my mother came out unharmed. She had nothing other than just that immediate impact. If you looked at our car, it was totaled. And I cannot even believe that nothing happened to me at that point. I was taken to the emergency hospital, but I came out okay, and I called Patty immediately from the car and said I had met with an accident. And he was in town, and he immediately, even though he was in a meeting, usually he will never pick up the phone and I don't disturb him. But for that particular moment he did, and he came immediately, about half hour drive, and he said there was cars piled up because of the accident. And I was in the hospital, and the gentleman who had hit my car had come out also with just an elbow fracture. Nothing else had happened because and more than anything, and this is what Swami did for me, is that gentleman spoke the truth there and said, I ran the red light. And he said, I was speeding, I ran the red light. And the police came, even though I had inched few inches past the white line, but I was not really in the path of the oncoming traffic. The police came and declared both of us as no fault to either of us. He came back, and things could have happened so differently. It was 2 weeks away from Priya's wedding. A lot of different things could have happened, but he was there. I cannot thank him enough for that situation there. Something could have happened to my mother. She was 80 years old. I would feel guilty for the rest of my life for what happened. I could have been not walking, or I could not have been even existent. Third, the gentleman, if something had happened to him, he may have come back
he wouldn't have existed. Nobody would have known that he ran the red light. I would have had a misdemeanor charge for having crossed the white line and for somebody's death. So many things could have happened. It was so worse.
Multiple possibilities.
Multiple possibilities.
But what makes you attribute to this entire much ado over nothing episode to Swami?
If it was not for him, my ultimate faith that I could have been in such a situation, if I did not know Swami, I do not think I would have had that clarity of mind to think otherwise. I feel my ultimate faith, he saved me in that situation. He came to my rescue and put me in a situation where it was like a small little blemish. Go on with it. I'm there for you, and I'm here, and I protected you, and I protected you, I protected him, and I protected your mother, and I wanted everything to go smoothly for you. It couldn't have happened if I did not have the faith that our good Lord Swami did this for me.
Mm-hmm. Paddy, post-Mahasamadhi?
You don't see Swami's presence in a physical form, right? But to me, I think mentally I was already, as I told you, with the series of events, and I had around 2005, 2006 come to grips with it, where just looking at him during darshan meant a lot to me, right? Because there was nothing much I was going to ask him other than making sure that I followed his teachings. So there's really, he is always there, and I feel he is around. I feel I can communicate with him, and I feel when I'm in doubt, I talk to him.
How do you communicate with him?
I just talk to him.
Mm-hmm. And how does he communicate back with you?
Normally in the morning when I go and I get up in the morning and I do suprabhatam and I sit down in front of his altar for a while. And if I have any trauma or anything that bothers me, I just get some response of how I need to act, and I just blindly go follow that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that's how he communicates.
Like an intuitive plan?
It's just an intuitive thing that comes and says, do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And any discussions, any decisions I make in life, I pray to him before I do it, because I feel he guides me, right? So he is there. And frankly, I it would be great when you come to Puttaparthi to have a physical darshan of him, but I really, his attaining samadhi has not changed anything for me in the way I feel or what I've done. He's there and he's always around, right?
He's looking over us and all the time. There is no two ways about it. It's a strong faith. And if, even for the next generation who may not have seen him in physical form,
mm-hmm.
just his teachings and learning and having that faith that he is there will definitely guide them to do the right thing. If they have that faith, they can go on and they don't need to see him in physical form. Yes, we were blessed, but I don't think he's not there watching over them. That's my personal feeling.
See, for me, I think what Swami has taught me is life is about perfecting yourself, not trying to perfect the world. And when you perfect yourself and you set examples, the world understands and responds in certain ways. But it's not my job today to perfect anyone or change anyone, because I've got a lot of faults in myself that I need to focus on correcting and make sure that I do the right things at all the time, right? So this is all about self-improvement for me, and that's the way I look at it. So any event or anything that happens, here's my logic. If I didn't exist in this world, that event that happened would never exist. So I'm the cause of that event happening, therefore I'm the solution to that cause, which means I got to dig deep into myself and try to analyze and improve the situation and be focused on self-improvement, self-audit of myself, and trying to to follow Swami's teaching. So that's really where I'm focused. And
it's a bit abstract for me. So let's say a certain outcome came from an American election. How are you the cause of it? And how is the solution lying with you?
No, there are several contributions I can make. I could take, first of all, I vote for the right candidate.
Mm-hmm. First of all, you just make sure you turn up on voting day.
On voting day, vote for the right candidate. Mm-hmm. And if I have very serious differences or I do not feel that the person who is the head of the country is doing ethical things, I have a voice and I can talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can enter into debates with people who think otherwise. And I could make my point be known. And that's the only, but the point is I do my duty in the best possible way I can.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And sometimes you succeed. Sometimes you kind of transform people as you're going through. They start thinking about it. So to me, that's where I focus all my energy on, right? And do a self-audit of yourself every day and say, did I do it right? And some days, you do certain things right. The next day, you would do the same things wrong, and you're back one step. You're forward one step. But if you did the self-audit and had a way to rate yourself each day, it's going to be an upward-sloping curve over a period of time, right?
Hopefully, yes.
Hopefully,
for all of us.
Right? And then you got to work towards that, right? See, the one thing I just wanted to mention, the very last time we were here,
2011.
Yeah, Swami, that day Swami came very, very late. And we were all waiting there. I'm sure you probably recall that he came at 7:30 and they were singing bhajans. And that day I happened to sit in a very strategic spot. So as they were pushing the wheelchair and coming, I was actually not too far from when Sri Bhaskar was sitting. Swami came. And as he was coming, I knew he was going to come to me. So I had a little piece of paper I took, and then I wrote there, thank you, Swami, for everything. I don't know why I did it, but that's what I did. When I folded that, he came. So I got up, I gave the letter to him, you know. He just opened his hand, kind of slid it in. Then I took a Pada Namaskar, and as I got up, I didn't know what came over me. I just went right back, hugged his feet, and I kissed his feet. And at that moment, I felt that was my last interaction with him. So I came back, I talked about it to her, I talked about it to Sudhir Bhaskar, and they all said, no, yeah, nothing like that is going to happen. The next day, I went in the morning to the mandir, I was finished my prayers, I come out, and one of the boys came to me and he said, sir, I have a DVD of this. Your interaction with Swami.
Oh, lucky you.
And I got that, and I just couldn't believe. That was my last parting gift from Swami. I view it as a parting gift because even today, I play that and I watch it. Anytime precious. I need his presence, I do that.
What a precious
that
memory.
That is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And then that day I felt that was the last interaction I was going to have with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a few weeks later, he attained samadhi.
Yes. We had come here in the month of February. In March, he had gone to the hospital.
Yeah.
So we were quite fortunate to have had his darshan.
Mm-hmm. So my final question to you, Lakshmi and Paddy, is when you go up to the Mahasamadhi for darshan, what does it mean to you?
It means to me thanking Swami for having seen him in his physical form here. Not necessarily Mahasamadhi for me in terms of him not being around for me. He's there at all time. But for me, that's a point of being reverent to him. I offer my humble thanks to him for all these wonderful years and all the lovely teachings for him and having taken me through life up to this point and post. So it's, again, no different from when I came to see him in his physical form and getting my battery recharged. So that same feeling is still there for me, and that'll only be here where he walked in Puttaparthi. And that is my ultimate love, and that will never change. And Prashanti Nilayam is heaven, and it's God, and his presence is here in Puttaparthi, period.
Paddy?
See, for me, I think this is where I saw Swami. And this is where I felt I was in heaven. And this is where I was able to interact with the Lord. That will never change. So today when I come in, yes, you know, we see Swami's Samadhi, but there is also Swami's chair. And I still feel that he is sitting there. So every time the bhajan is over, I look at the chair and I stretch out and I prostrate in front of Swami and then I just walk away. Because to me, he is there and this is where I met him. And as long as I'm alive, this is where I'm going to come because this is where I can connect with him. The feeling you get when you go to the bhajan hall, there is still the visual of him sitting there as the boys are singing bhajan and looking and, you know, those visions will never go away. So there is no place other than Puttaparthi where I felt the presence of the Lord, and that's how it's going to remain.
That makes our Prashantanilayam and the Mahasannidhi the holiest shrine on the face of this planet.
Yeah, it's heaven on earth, and it will never change.
There's no question.
On that very blissful note, I thank you both very much for joining us, Lakshmi and Paddy Padmanabhan, on Radio Sai. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having us.
This has been our way to express to everybody else how much love and grace Swami gave and sharing it with everybody has given us immense pleasure. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Dear listeners, once again, greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam and a warm welcome to all of you for today's Thursday Live. This is the segment Morning Glory and I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai. The time right now in our studio is 10:30 a.m. Indian Standard Time. Well, till now, dear listeners, you listened to a conversation with Mrs. Lakshmi Padmanabhan and Mr. Paddy Padmanabhan. In conversation with them was Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi, and this came to you as part of our radio series, Tryst with Divinity. We hope you like this conversation, dear listeners. As always, you can send us your feedback to listener@radiosai.org. And let me tell you, dear listeners, like this, there are about 200 conversation with Swami's devotees in which Swami's devotees share their experiences with Bhagavan. And you can download them from our website at your leisure and listen to them. Well, in fact, what we play today was second part of the conversation. The first part of the conversation was played last week. And if you have missed the first part, you can again go to our website, radiosai.org, and download it and listen to it. Okay, now it's time for Radio Sai Bhajan Request Program. I have got, in fact, a dozen of requests from many of you, dear listeners, and today I'll be playing few of the bhajans. To begin with, I'll play three bhajans, and at the end of the third bhajan, I'll be back again, and I will share with you one beautiful incident that a student had with Bhagavan. In fact, a very profound incident experience. Okay, the first bhajan that I'm going to play right now is Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, and this was requested by Mr. Ravindran Menon. Following this bhajan will be Mata Mata Sai Mata, requested by Mr. Munish Kumar Prakashan, and the third bhajan will be Sahara Do Bhagwan, requested by Mr. Sai Charan from Chennai. So let's listen to these three bhajans, and at the end of the third bhajan I'll be back again. And after me talking to you for a minute or so, we'll continue the bhajan request program.
Shri Ram Jay Ram Jay Jay Ram Janaki Jeevan Ram. Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, Janaki Ji.
Avana Rama Hare Jaya Raghava Sundara Rama पावना राम हरे जय राघव सुंदर
शांतिदायिनी ताई माता Sahara do Bhagavan.
Welcome back, dear listeners, for today's Thursday Live. This is the segment Morning Glory, and the time right now in our studio is 10:40 a.m. Indian Standard Time, and it's a pleasant day here at the ashram. So right now we are having the Radio Sai Bhajan Request program, and as you just now listened, I played three bhajans requested by three listeners, and we'll continue this bhajan request program. But before that, I thought I will narrate to you all one beautiful, profound incident that a student had with Bhagwan. And with this incident, Bhagwan teaches us a very nice lesson for all of us to learn. So this incident goes like this. This was narrated by Brother Ashwin, an alumnus of Bhagwan's university. And this incident happened when Brother Ashwin was a student in Swami's educational institutions. During that time, there was a special privilege for Swami students. Swami students could cook something nice for Swami, which Swami liked. And Swami and the students could take whatever they cooked, the dish, to Swami's residence and offer it to Bhagwan. Well, this was a wonderful privilege for the students. And with this privilege, the boys used to get an additional opportunity to have a private session with Bhagwan. Just like the three sessions which we have in Vrindavan campus, which we used to have. So the incident goes like this. On one such occasion, the students found that Swami at that time used to like pakodas, hot pakodas. Well, the pakoda is a round ball kind of Indian snack, which is fried in oil, and Indians eat it as snacks. So at that point of time, Swami liked these pakodas. So a group of boys cooked pakodas with a lot of devotion and prayer, and they made sure that the recipe was perfect. It was proportionate, not too hot, spicy, or not too bland. Such things the boys took care of very nicely, and they went to Swami's private residence and offered it to Bhagwan. A group of boys went and offered it to Bhagwan. And as always, Swami told all the boys to sit, and they were having a private session with Bhagwan. And Swami took one pakoda and put it in his mouth, and Swami ate it. And after Swami ate the pakoda, Swami didn't feel comfortable. Swami's eyes became red and it slightly watered, and it was as if there was some chili in the pakoda and it was too spicy. And the boys also felt a bit bad because they had taken care that the pakodas were very good, and it so happened that Swami picked a pakoda which had a chili in it. And to reduce the tension at that moment, Swami told, "See boys, of so many pakodas, I picked the pakoda which had a chili in it." And then Swami continued saying something which was very profound. Swami said, "See boys, in your life too, if you surrender to me, if you give yourself to me, then remember that I will take all that is spicy, all that is hot, all that is which is difficult for you to handle in life, and I will give back only good." In this case also, Swami took the pakoda which had chili in it, and Swami offered all the other good pakodas to the boys. Well, dear listeners, so from this incident we learn that if we surrender to Swami, Swami will take care of our life and make it smooth. We should just give the driving seat of this vehicle of body to Bhagwan and let Swami drive it, and let's just sit back and enjoy the journey of life. I just thought of sharing this profound incident with you all, dear listeners, because it has touched a chord in my heart, and I hope you all also liked it. Okay, let's now continue the bhajan request program. So now, the fourth bhajan that I'll be playing for you for today's session is "He Shyam Sundara." This bhajan was requested by Mr. Nitin Magal. Following this bhajan, I will be playing the bhajan "Sarva Dharma Swarupa Sai Parthi Ke Avatara," requested by Mr. Bhavin Solanki. Following this bhajan will be the bhajan "Nandalala Nandalala Dayakaro Bhagwan," requested by Mrs. Sai Sudha from Sai Sudha Bhalachandran. And the fourth bhajan will be "Sai Charan Sukhdai Man," requested by Mr. Shivakumar Lakshman from Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Wow, I'm happy that there are listeners of Radio Sai even from far country like Saudi Arabia. And this bhajan, Sai Charan Sukhdai Man, in fact, there are two bhajans starting with this line, Sai Charan Sukhdai Man. So I'll be playing one bhajan today, and I hope this is the bhajan that Mr. Shivkumar Lakshman has requested. So after I play these four bhajans, I think the time will be 11 a.m. and it will be time for the next episode of Thursday Live, Radio Sai Answering Booth, and Prem will be here in a moment from now. So dear listeners, I'll play these four bhajans for today, and the rest of the bhajans requested by you all, I'll be playing it next Thursday during the segment Morning Glory. So at the end of the fourth bhajan, you will be joined by Brother Prem. I take your leave. Now I offer this segment at Bhagwan's lotus feet and meet you again next Thursday at 9:40. Jai Sai Ram.
Ishama Sundara, Sai Sundara. Shyam Sundara, he Sai Sundara.
Thank you.
सुंदरा नीरज रोचना साई सुंदरा ब्रह्मांड नायका ये साई सुंदरा Sai Sundara
Sai Ram. चरण सुखदाय मन
चरण सुखदाय मन।